Now, how far would you go to pursue your love of cricket? 18-year-old Tommy Lamb has been on the road for over 100 days, making his way from Manchester in England, cross land through Europe and Asia, in the hope of making the start of the third test in Adelaide.
Day 101 of going from Manchester to Australia without a plane. I'm currently stuck hitchhiking in southern Thailand, where I've just lost my passport, my bag with all my valuables in it.
Well, more on that in a moment. He has travelled 16,000 miles without taking a plane, relying on trains, buses, boats, motorbikes and hitchhiking. And he has just one rule: to play cricket in every place he stops. I caught up with Tommy just as the second test match at the Gabba in Brisbane was about to start. Tommy Lamb, it is so fantastic to have you on the programme. Thanks for joining us on Saturday Extra.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Tommy, just to begin with, just rattle off all the countries you've been to on this extraordinary journey from your homeland in England to try to get to Australia for the Ashes.
I've calculated. I'm currently in country number 20. So obviously started in the UK, left England, went to Netherlands, Germany, Austria, Slovenia, went from Slovenia into Croatia, Montenegro, North Macedonia, Bulgaria, Turkey, Armenia, Georgia, down into Iran, Pakistan, China, and then south to Vietnam, Laos, and then Thailand, and then Malaysia, and then now into Singapore. Actually, Singapore's country 21, I should say. Malaysia was 20.
That is a lot of stamps in your passport. Now, a lot of English fans dream of coming to watch the Ashes in Australia, and a lot of them would think that a 24-hour journey on a plane is arduous. Enough. When did you decide to take the scenic route? When did you decide to take what at times must have been quite a treacherous route? How did you come up with this cricketing odyssey?
Well, I always wanted to take a year out after school. I've always been interested in travel. I love my cricket, obviously, as well. And my dad, about 2 years ago, he was just telling a story of two people that did this same trip in the 1970s. And when I heard him talking about that, I thought that sounded great. I knew I wanted to go to the Ashes during my year off. I knew it would collide. And I thought, well, if I could get to the Ashes without a plane, it'd be a great way to make content online. It'd be a great way to just see, get myself off the beaten path and force myself to see different parts of the world that otherwise I wouldn't go to. And that's the sort of travel I want to do.
And the people who did this original journey, I think I'm right in saying, are the people who came up with The Lonely Planet, that famous travel guide that so many of us have relied upon over the years, especially those of us on a budget.
Yeah, exactly. No, exactly those people.
You've had a lot of adventures. You've had a lot of challenges. You've been through some pretty tricky terrain. I mean, Iran, that's a pretty treacherous place to be in. I think the British even advise against British people actually going there. What was Iran like? Tell me about that.
Absolutely loved it. It was one of my favourite places that I've been to. I mean, there's definitely a bias here that I think when I was in Iran, every day you wake up and as a Westerner, as a Brit, you're sort of thinking, oh my God, I'm in Iran, and you can't quite believe it. But the people were just unbelievable. I had a great guide as well, very informative, which was rare for my travels. I'm not normally very historically aware when I'm travelling, but with a guide there, because I was forced to have a guide. I mean, it was just like one of those places where you hear the classic cliche thing, it's not what you expect to find. And it was exactly that. It wasn't what I expected to find. It was a beautiful place with beautiful people, and you got to separate the government from the rest of it.
Iran is not what you expect to find. I can definitely endorse that view. It's very bohemian in parts for a start.
Yeah.
Pakistan. Tell me about Pakistan. You went through Baluchistan. I mean, that's a tricky place to be in.
Balochistan was far more dangerous than Iran, just on the basis. I mean, I have a few Pakistani friends back home, and that when I told them I was going into Balochistan, they couldn't quite believe it themselves. So I was with a military escort for about 3 days. So I spent two nights in a prison cell, sort of in two different parts of Balochistan. And then thankfully, on the third day, I got shifted out. But again, you know, even in Balochistan, all the local people were so friendly. And my logic always goes that, you know, if the locals can survive it for their whole lives, I'm sure I can survive it for a couple of days, and you know, I'm doing it in a privileged way, so I can't really complain.
That's a great philosophy to have. But tell us how you ended up in a prison cell. I mean, that sounds pretty wacky.
Well, the problem was that I thought it's quite a long journey, but when you're in a military escort, you get basically, you know, let's say I'm traveling for 12 hours in a day, that'll probably be about 20 different military escorts, because every time you move districts, you get into a new car. So on the first day, I only got about halfway into Balochistan, and I was in the middle of absolutely nowhere, dropped off in this town. It was about about midnight, and they basically said to me, well, there's no hotels here, you're going to have to stay in the prison cell. And I didn't quite understand. I thought it was a police station, but it turned out I was literally in a prison cell, and you could hear the people sort of next door, you know, in the jail. And it was the same thing the next night in Quetta. They actually told me to get a hotel, but I argued with the chief superintendent or whatever. I was like, no, I want to stay in the prison cell because I've got my camping gear with me, and I didn't trust them that if I went to a hotel, they would come back to me the next day and I would be able to get out of Balochistan. So I just wanted to leave as quickly as I could and be independent once again.
Yeah, right. Vietnam. Yeah, really awful what happened in Vietnam. You were involved in a motorbike accident.
Yeah.
Tell us about that, because you really were in a bad way.
Yeah, I was. So I'd sort of done the loop and everything, done the north, and then I was heading south on Cat Ba Island, and I was driving a motorbike. I've never driven a motorbike before, so it was just the stupidest thing you could possibly do as an 18-year-old Brit travelling in Southeast Asia. Classic thing to do. I was driving for about an hour. I don't remember any of the actual crash, so I fractured my skull, broke my nose, had quite a few bad scratches here and there, but it wasn't the end of the world. Like, I was quite grateful, to be honest, that it wasn't anything worse. Everything like that. Spending a few days in hospital, thankfully, was very well taken care of, and then a few days in a hotel. And to be honest, I just felt worse telling my mum. That was probably the most nerve-wracking part of the whole thing, rather than the accident itself.
Well, what did mum say at that point? Did she say, Tommy, just jump on a plane and join us in Australia? Your folks are cricket fans. They're members of the Barmy Army. The idea is to have this reunion for the third test, isn't it,
in
Adelaide? You knew that you were going to miss the first test, which is maybe just as well. Did your mum just say, Tommy, get on a plane, we'll pay your airfare, see you in Adelaide?
Pretty much. I mean, they were even one step further. I think they said they wanted to fly out, but I convinced them that, you know, like, with all due respect to them, even if they had flown out, even if I'd been with them, I would have still been injured and my scars would have still been there. So I didn't quite see the point. It was another challenge. You know, this whole trip has been a challenge, and I knew that was just another leg of the challenge. And even in the moment, I knew that looking back, it'd just be another thing that happened, and I got through. And as I say, I was just grateful that it wasn't anything worse and I was well looked after.
Well, Tommy, I think a lot of people have become quite emotionally invested in your journey because you have been recording it on Instagram, and the Instagram posts around that time are really kind of confronting. You've got terrible injuries. And a lot of people must have been thinking, oh, goodness me, Tommy, you know, find a safe way of getting to Australia.
I'd say Southeast Asia's very, very safe. No, I appreciated all the comments and all the messages. And, you know, with social media, it inevitably helps so much when you know you've got so many people backing you. But that also just spurs me on even more, you know, when I know other people are watching, and especially if I can inspire people in any sort of way, which sounds ridiculous to say as an 18-year-old. But if I can, then even better. So it just spurs me on more.
Now, you recovered from your motorbike crash, and then you lost your passport.
So I hitchhiked through Laos, came through Thailand, got stuck in the floods right in the south, got held up. And then by the time I was allowed to move, got moving, wanted to hitchhike down the coast. And the first person I hitchhiked with that day, I left my bag in their car. And I have a great idea where I put all my valuables in exactly the same place, and I just look after that one place really well. Except this one time where I left it in his car and he'd gone off, never came back. And I must say, I was very terrified for quite a few hours. But thankfully, the Thai police helped me out. And by the end of the day, I was reunited with my passport, and I actually ended up getting on a bus heading south and got to Malaysia the next day.
Well, they always talk about the kindness of strangers, don't they? And it seems to me, from watching your Instagram, you've benefited from the kindness of strangers a lot. I mean, the Thai police were incredibly helpful when you lost your passport, right? I think they drove you to a bus station, you managed to get this bus, you were reunited with a guy that had given you that hitch. It was quite a saga.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, every part of the world, you know, like before I left, I think I would always have this argument with my parents, but especially my older brother. My older brother was a big fan of calling me a naive 18-year-old who doesn't know about the real world. But I always had this belief that there were people, and, you know, 99% of the people you meet are all nice no matter where you are in the world. And that's exactly what I've experienced. No matter which part of the world I'm in, I meet so many nice people that are willing to help me no matter what situation I'm in.
Tommy Lamb, you are getting a crash course in the real world, I tell you. Now, one of the things that you have wanted to do every place you've gone, every country you've gone, is to have a game of cricket. Tell me about that.
It's been great fun. So yeah, every time I spend the night in a place, a new place, I try and play some cricket there. I've done it in every country I've been to so far. I've absolutely loved it, especially in the early sort of stages of my journey when I was only spending 24 hours in a European city. And also, you know, I was still a lot more new to this. It was a great way to just push myself out of my comfort zone a bit. You know, you go up to strangers and who are in a rush, and you find the best way to do this. But, you know, you it's rejection therapy in a way. You get all these people giving you weird looks. What on earth are you asking? What on earth are you doing? But eventually eventually you'll find a few people that are really up for it, and you end up playing a 30-minute game with an Albanian border guard on the lake in north, you know, in northern Albania, and it's just a memory for a lifetime.
Yeah, it's fantastic. Tell us where you are now, Tommy, because I think you have hit a snag, haven't you? You're in Singapore at the moment. You're trying to get a boat that'll take you all the way to Australia, and you're having problems.
Yeah, so I've been in Singapore for the last sort of 24, 48 hours. I'm planning to move on in the next sort of 24 hours, heading further south to Indonesia. But yeah, I've emailed every single cargo ship company I can think of. I've gone to multiple cargo ship HQs. I've gone to marinas. I've asked everyone for boats heading towards Australia. No one quite knows exactly what I should do, because not very many people do this exact route. But from what I've heard, maybe Bali will have some more luck. Maybe Timor Leste will have a bit more luck. I'm really not sure. I'd be willing to miss the Adelaide test to try and get a boat, but it's even coming close. Yeah, it's even coming close for Christmas and for Boxing Day. You know, that's on the horizon. So hey, if anyone can help who's listening, I'd be very appreciated.
Well, I'm sure there are a lot of people who would love to help you. And frankly, a lot of people who, when you do get to Australia, are going to buy you a beer. But so you're worried about missing Adelaide. Have you got tickets for Melbourne and Sydney?
Yeah. So, you know, when I first left from England, my aim was to get there for Melbourne, Christmas Day, do all of that. But then I thought, if I aim for Melbourne and then I'm late, then I'm going to miss Christmas Day and Boxing Day. So I rearranged to aim for Adelaide. And then I knew that if I had these delays, which have come in Southeast Asia, then I'd still have a bit of time to get to Melbourne and Christmas.
Tommy, the Ashes brings out a fierce rivalry between the English and the Australians. But I dare say that every Australian listening to this is thinking, I hope you make it, Tommy. I hope you make it in time for the Adelaide test. And if not, we'll see you in Melbourne.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Think bigger about the world we live in. Ask your smart speaker to play ABC RN.